Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, it's Friday, so you know what that means. The Atlanta sports guys have reconvened after a week away where I don't know how to describe this. I went to the beach, and I got burned on day one. The fellow redhead on this very program, Garrett Chapman, can relate to this lobster-like experience. Garrett, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Those sunburns, I've been sunburned on road trips before, so I know exactly what you're feeling.
It's not great. Like, I'm peeling on my left arm. Like, I was SPF 50'd up, man, and I still burned. I was so upset. Like, I reapplied in the afternoon. So I was that guy at the beach with the long-sleeve Tennessee shirt. So that was my experience after where
I've been that guy.
Yeah, it's not great. Well, we know you've been that guy, Garrett, because you're a fair-skinned, what would be the word, a ginger, red-headed person.
No chance. I still have no idea what you guys are talking about. I've never been called a ginger in my life.
Hey, Matt, it's early, but you can see the picture that we're both looking at on the Skype call, right?
It speaks for itself. Exactly. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah, I got a red shirt. That's the only thing red about that photo.
No, that's the most red-headed photo I've ever seen in my life. Max Markovich is also here. Max, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm pumped for game three. I'm ready to go.
Are both of y'all going? What's the plan for tonight?
I'm not going.
I wish I was there.
No, go buy some standing room only tickets. I mean, they're only like $95 or something like that. I mean, it's honestly, considering the fact that you can get into the stadium and watch some playoff basketball, it's so worth it.
So they're doing 100% capacity tonight.
Are they?
No, I'm asking. Is that what it is?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, but they do allow standing room only tickets just because they want to get people in there. But no, they I think it's still going to be like 75% or something like that. They want to leave it open by the actual players. But the other side is definitely packed.
Interesting. Yeah, because you see it outside with the Bucks last night and the fans who are watching outside and kind of bringing it back to what we used to experience and like that whole Toronto situation when Kawhi and that group went on their title run. But yeah, I mean, Tennessee, like, they're losing their minds to fans. Like, they're going like 400 plus for one ticket. Like, they're doing like an outdoor viewing experience for the Super Regionals this weekend, and it's like, wow, we really went from no fans to fans are willing to pay $400 to squeeze into this tight situation around a bunch of strangers. It's pretty wild that this just happened like that, but here we are. Before we get into the Hawks, because I think I want to save that for the end here, we did not talk after the Julio Jones trade because I was away on vacation, and Julio, I got asked this week being in Tennessee, so there's a lot of Titans fans, and they are hyped about these videos. If I see one more Julio Jones cut on ESPN where they're like, oh, he's back, and the Julio quotes of just like, just watch, about people who are concerned about my health, and just over I don't even know how to describe this. It's just like this weird obsession with workout tape, and it's like, this is great. Yeah, we knew Julio was a workout monster. Remember when he was doing the workouts in LA? Was that last year, 2 years ago, with T.O. and like that? We know that T.O. or that Julio Jones is in shape. We all know that. We love Julio Jones, but it's about whether or not he gets enough snaps, and we know the numbers on how many snaps he's been getting the last couple of years. But with all that being said, how do you guys feel about the Julio Jones trade now that we've had some time to think about it, the return, where we're at with this roster, how it makes sense for the Titans? Garrett, let's start with you.
I mean, I'm disappointed that he's gone, obviously. I mean, I thought he was going to be a Falcon for life maybe just a couple months ago. I mean, so that pill is no less difficult to swallow today than it was a week ago. But at the end of the day, I mean, we got a decent return for him. I was convinced that we were going to get a first-round pick. But obviously that's not going to happen. But look, at the end of the day, they picked up that full salary, and that's really what's important, because now the Atlanta Falcons can turn our focus to the future. We can go get some legitimate free agents, sign our rookie class finally. So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm sick and tired of seeing these workout videos just like you are. I mean, look, we know who Julio Jones is. He's a perennial All-Pro. He's a stud of a wide receiver, and he's a workout monster. The guy has quick feet. I think I just saw that. Someone was doing some random drill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
none of this is new. Like, what is
this? None of this is new. The guy's a stud. Of course he is. He ran a 4.340 on a broken foot. Yes, he's a stud. I mean, come on. I'm not going to learn anything new from watching Julio Jones do random speed and agility drills. I mean, we know who he is. He's a guy who's going to go off for 1,400 yards because he did it 7 consecutive times.
Yeah, and the Falcons are not trading him because of his physical limitations.
No,
it was entirely a cap thing where we couldn't sign our rookie class because of the sins of the previous administration.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Ryan Tannehill's not a better quarterback than Matt Ryan is. I don't know. I don't think any human being on this planet thinks that. They just lost Arthur Smith to the team he left. I get it. You have Derrick Henry. Yeah, you have A.J. Brown on the other side. It's going to be a matchup nightmare. I mean,
Someone compared them. I think Barnwell on ESPN yards? Compared them to the Cowboys of the AFC. And I think that's a really apt comparison. I 100% agree, because that defense is going to be atrocious. They haven't addressed it at all. And the offense just has a lot of names. And a lot of, like, the Ezekiel Elliott, Mari Cooper, Michael Gallup type names. And then you have a quarterback who's probably in the top 15-ish range, like with Dak and Tannehill, but you would never put them in the elite category. And I don't know. I think that's an app comparison. Max, what do you think about all this?
Yeah. I think there's the emotional reaction, and then there's sort of the logical reaction, and the emotional reaction comes first, right? It's like, we grew up watching this guy play. You know, he's arguably the best player in franchise history, and it ends like this. Like, you know, it ends with a second round pick. And like, in the logical side of me, it's like a second round pick plus a fourth round pick for a 32-year-old receiver is pretty good value in this market, period. And especially on that deal, and especially not, you know, absorbing all that money. And so the emotional part of me is like, damn, like I will miss watching Julio Jones in a Falcons jersey. It will pain me to watch him in a Titans jersey. And that's just never going to change. And it also pains me just that he just sort of, it's like one of those mutual breakups where like one side is, you know, super in their feelings about it, and one side just doesn't care at all, but it's like quote unquote mutual. That's how this felt. It felt like Julio just doesn't care at all. But that we all really cared. So, you know, the emotional side of it is tough, but the logical side of it is like, this was, you know, good value, a good destination for him, best for all sides to move on. Let's move forward. I will say, I kind of get annoyed at like sort of the, you know, national sports media verse that views things through this dichotomy of like either tear it down or you're trying to win a Super Bowl, and like there's no in between. Like there was so much this week about like, what are the Falcons doing? They didn't draft a quarterback, and you know, they kept Matt Ryan, and they're on the hook with all this money, but they're trading Julio Jones. I thought they were going for it. And it's like, that's such a simplistic narrative that doesn't capture sort of the complicated factors at play here. One of which is that Julio Jones demanded a trade.
Yeah, that's
from all we know. Like he asked to be traded. It's not like, you know, I don't know. It wasn't like Terry Fontenot got this job and the first thing he said is, "Damn, I really want to trade Julio Jones." let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I don't envy the situation Fontenot is in, and I think what concerns me, I guess, from this trade is, I think Fontenot, if I had to guess, would have kept him if the cap situation was not what it was. I don't think anyone in the Falcons organization, I think it was also not bad enough where they couldn't repair the situation with Julio. I mean, Russell Wilson is back with the Seahawks and giving weird answers. Like, Russell Wilson's press conferences, I don't know if you guys have been listening to these, but when he talks about the trade stuff and the word salad that he uses to describe his discontent with the Seattle Seahawks is something to behold. I couldn't imagine having a long conversation with Russell Wilson. I think it would just drive me up the wall. But
weird dude.
He's an extremely weird dude. I don't know. I just think that Julio would have come back if the Falcons were like, "Look, man, just let us see how it all works out. We got Kyle Pitts, we got Matt Ryan, we got an offensive line that's got some stability behind it again. Let's just run it back and see what happens. And then if it doesn't work and we flame out in spectacular fashion, then hey, that's just we'll reconvene." Because I don't think he was the type of guy to be like, "Oh, I hate, like, I'm just out, I'm not playing." I don't think that was in Julio Jones. So him demanding a trade, I don't think would have been that bad, but it was also just like someone had to fall for just the financial issues. And that's what bums me out more. It's not the draft capital that the Falcons got. And I think a second and a fourth is still solid for a 32-year-old receiver. It's just that, like, he would still be here if it wasn't because of financial reasons. And, like, to lose the franchise's best player when he's still playing at a pretty elite level just because you can't afford to put together an entire roster with him still in the books is just, like, one of the more depressing realities of, like, this is a business and that's what we're going to have to remember forever, is, like, Julio just got traded because essentially we couldn't afford him anymore. Like, that is just a bummer. Right, Garrett?
I want to jump in there for two reasons. One, the reason that we can't afford him right now, you know, besides all of the many issues that Thomas Dimitroff and that entire front office created through the salary cap, is that Julio Jones demanded a restructured deal with 3 years left on his contract, which is like borderline. No one talks about this, but it's borderline unheard of in the league to do that. And it put the Falcons in a really difficult situation to say either we're going to have a very public standoff with our best player ever, or we're going to extend him without basically any precedent to do that here. And, you know, I agree with you. Like, it sucks that he's not going to be on the team. But I also do think, like, if Bill Belichick was the one making this trade and he was the one trading away Julio Jones, he would be lauded as sort of like, "Oh, like, this is the smart moves Bill Belichick makes when his players are sort of, you know, at the end of their careers, and he gets value for them, and he, you know, it's a cold-blooded business, but this is such a smart move." And I don't think Terry Fontenot, you know, for good reason, gets the same benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, honestly, that's the biggest thing that you just hit on, is the fact that this guy demanded a trade with 3 years left on his deal, didn't get it, and then threw a hissy fit about it and didn't come to camp. And that was a very frustrating summer to be covering the Atlanta Falcons, because that's all anybody was going to talk about. And he just became a major, major distraction. And that's something that a lot of people really don't talk about anymore. And then when he comes out and says, basically, or these, like, you see a lot of these reports where he was like, "Oh yeah, this is just a lose-lose situation. Like, I lost this deal." What are you talking about, Julio Jones? So you just got you have a massive, massive contract boost with 2 years left on your deal, because he got it that next offseason. He was like, "Well, I should have gotten it a year ago, blah, blah, blah." Oh, shut up. I mean, come on. He became the highest paid receiver in football with multiple years left on his deal. And then he says apparently that's when that relationship soured. Well, I don't know what you're talking about, because those guys aren't even in place use anymore. So, whatever. I mean, the guys pissed me off a little bit. I mean, just it's the only thing that people have talked about for the better part of 3 months now. And now that he's gone, now he's like, oh yeah, now I'm on a team that's going to win, blah 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 blah. And it's just, oh my god, I'm just so over it.
When's the last time Julio Jones showed up in OTA in a Falcons uniform, like his rookie year?
Even then, I don't even know if I think he was injured. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy. You can hear the frustration in my voice.
This is venting. We're venting. We're letting it all out.
I suspect that if he didn't get traded, none of this would be coming out. We're like, oh, it's Julio. He's just Julio being Julio.
Of course not. Of course not.
Yeah, but now it's gone. Yeah. Transitioning to the Braves. They, for whatever reason, have no interest in being a 500 baseball team. Just not something the Atlanta Braves are after this year. What do you make of the last 2 weeks? Because we haven't recorded in Braves baseball. What have we learned about the state of this team, Max?
I don't know. Here we are still. I don't feel like we've learned a whole lot yet. Like it feels like they're trying to make their move. Last night or 2 nights ago or whatever was a perfect example where like it looks all night like they're gonna go past 500 and really put a charge into the Mets and try to get up there, but one walk off later with two outs in the ninth and it's back to under 500 and everything's terrible and the bullpen sucks and all that. I just keep coming back to this idea that it just like it feels like one of those years. It just feels like one of those years where everything's off and it's not going to, it's not really going to click to the extent that it needs to click. And especially with the Mets starting to create some distance now, it's not that it's now or never, but it's starting to feel like it needs to be now sooner than later. And we keep talking about they're going to get hot, but the injuries add up and suspensions and all that stuff is adding up to a formula that like doesn't sit well with me. And it's like they're 4 games out. So it's not like, we can't definitively say anything. It just has felt like one of those years all year where nothing's really gone right.
Yeah. I mean, we've been pounding our head against the wall now for 3 months with the Atlanta Braves. I mean, these guys win a couple games, convince you that they're going to be good, get up to 500, lose 3. And then they're like, oh, yeah, then they win 1, and then they lose 4 more. And then they go on a 6-game winning streak, and then they flip around, and they're like, yeah, this is it. And then, no, and then you just fall right back. And it's just been that all freaking season. And, Max, like you said, I mean, like, look, everything seems to be going wrong. It's just one thing after another. And it's like, okay, finally, now we have the batting line, the lineup's hitting. Okay, now Soroka's out for the season. Okay, well now no one can hit, but then we have Ian Anderson throw 6 fantastic innings, and then all of a sudden he comes in and we bring in the bullpen, and then they can't throw a strike, and it's just been a very frustrating thing to watch because, look, this team is so much better than this, and I'm fully convinced of that, and I'm still waiting for this team to turn it on because I still think they will, but God, when is it going to happen? I really just have no idea because they've been talking about, oh, we just need a spark. Yeah, well, you've had plenty of sparks. I mean, you have Ronald Acuna hit an absolute blast against the Phillies 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, and that felt like the spark. And then we had the major comeback. That felt like the spark. Then you take 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers. That felt like the spark. Well, what other spark do you need? Just win baseball games. Don't let the final, I don't know, 3 outs fall away from you like you have the last 2 games. Just close it out and finish baseball games. It's been just extremely frustrating because I think they've lost, 6 games in the last 2 years. I think I saw the stat. They were like 108-6 or something in the last 8 outs or something along those lines. And when they had the lead this year, they've lost 7 of those games just this year. So they just got to close baseball games, and they haven't been able to do that. And hopefully they can figure it out enough to get to the trade deadline and acquire some assets. But, dude, like you said too, Max, like the Mets are starting to increase this distance. And look, they need to start winning sooner rather than later.
quote, Liberty Media has effectively shot this team in the foot with its unwillingness to invest in the bullpen. Such a damn shame. Which co-host tweeted this out?
That sounds like a very frustrated Garrett Chapman tweet.
Yeah, I think this is going to be interesting to monitor, but it's also just like the back half of this lineup is terrible. And also, like, when are we going to talk about Freddie? Like, Freddie's been okay, but like, we are now middle of June. He has 14 dingers, I think, as of this recording, but like, is he still batting 228? Am I misremembering that, or is it somewhere around that?
261.
Okay. He's fine, but he's not playing at an MVP level anymore. And I think when you look at the top of this lineup, Austin Riley has been just like a saving grace. I think he's still batting 300. Albie's back in the three spot, but then you look and Dansby's still at the five spot. And then you go down, you're like, oh, this is a problem. Like, this is a problem. Ender and Ciarte getting looks, like Almonte, like guys all over the place. Drew Waters is hitting well. Garrett's guy down there in AAA with the Stripers. But I don't know. The back half of this lineup is terrible. It's bad when I'm watching the Pirates and Dodgers this morning and going through their stuff and then seeing that, like, oh, the Pirates have a better lineup than the Atlanta Braves right now. Brian Hayes, Frazier, you go up and down the list and it's like, oh, they have a lot. They have more top-end talent there outside of the Acuna, Freeman stuff. But yeah, I'm concerned. I think there's just too many holes. I think the injury bug has hit them really hard. I think that there's just too many things that Alex Anthopoulos will have to do to get this team back into contention. But this year, I do think it's a lot more open than I think all of us thought, because I mean, the Giants are killing it and they're still in first. Dodgers, I mean, did you all see that Mookie double play yesterday?
No, I must have.
I did not.
Okay, y'all have to watch this after we get off this call, because Mookie caught, like, he came in, he was going low in right field, caught it and did this spin and just gunned this Pirate, I think it was Gonzalez, out at home. Like, his defensive chops are unreal. Like, it just, Mookie Betts is just an absolute delight to watch. But I don't know.
I remember.
Yeah, he's a delight.
I remember.
We can move past from that. We can move past. We can appreciate it now. But I think one positive, though, with our young guys, right, is, I think two positives. I trust Tucker Davidson. Like, that guy is Mr. Consistent. I trust Ian Anderson. I trust a lot more of our arms than I did a few months ago. And I also, Garrett, I think you're pretty high on William Contreras, right? Like, I think that seems like something where we hit. Like, that might be a hit there, right?
Well, I pegged him, I think it was like a month ago, whenever Travis d'Arnaud got hurt, I pegged him as the catcher of the future, just because this guy can rake. My biggest concern is still a pretty big concern, is that he's a bit of a liability behind the plate, like, just as a catcher. And fortunately for Atlanta, he's been enough to, or his bat has been enough to sort of mitigate that a little bit. And I mean, the guy's raking. The guy can really hit. He's good in the clutch. If runners on scoring position, he's able to put people, get people around the bases and score them. I mean, the guy's solid, but he's got to figure some things out behind the plate, because if he doesn't, if he can do that, then I mean, look, we're talking about like a potential like all-star for the Atlanta Braves, because this guy can absolutely hit the cover off the ball.
I'm all in on Tucker Davidson. Are y'all?
I like Tucker Davidson too.
He is the most consistent number four. Like, I would trust that guy as a number four for the next 10 years. That guy's got number four consistency written all over him. I like it.
Yeah, I like him. Maybe not the next decade or something, but yeah, I know what you're trying to say. But yeah,
he's gonna have like a 4.2,
like 3 or 4 years,
3.8 ERA.
At least the next month. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
He'll have a 3. He just already feels like a 32-year-old pitcher to me. Like, he already just feels like a 30. Like, there's no upside of like ace stuff with him, but he's just like, I need six innings from somebody I can count on. Okay, there's six. He might give up a run or two, but like, he's going to keep it in the end. But like, he's the antithesis of Sean Newcomb, the Sean Newcomb experience. And like, honestly, like Julio Teheran and guys like that from the previous experience. Let's get into the Hawks, guys. Game three tonight. Garrett will be in the standing room only section. Game two was defined by Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle going on Trey. in Trey just not having the room to operate that he previously did, because in game one it was almost all Danny Green and he ate Danny Green alive. Joel Embiid was just insane, just the what he is able to do with the ball, without the ball, defensively, just driving and just dunking on Capella, but also just drawing a bunch of fouls, and he's just incredible, and he's a very difficult player to stop. But also, we saw Kevin Huerter just shoot lights out. We shot Bogey just do everything he possibly could with a quiet Trey night, and then, you know, John Collins just being John Collins. And I'm concerned. I'm so curious to see what Nate runs out in the starting lineup, because I don't think you can do Solomon Hill anymore. I think that ship has sailed. Do you got the guy who has missed a free
throw? It's going to be Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter.
Kevin Huerter needs to come off the bench.
I disagree.
He absolutely has to come off the bench. We need to keep that scoring. He's been fantastic coming off the bench. Why change that?
All right, Max, here you go. Here you go, Max. Make the case for Kevin Huerter in the starting lineup,
we're talking about this with the idea that it's sort of like a regular season thing where the bench lineups will be almost exclusively bench lineups, and I don't think that's the way to think about it. I think the way to think about this Hawks team is Trey lineups and non-Trey lineups. And so if you start Kevin Huerter, that does not preclude you from staggering him, Bogey, Collins, Gallinari, whoever, to the extent that you can have two or three of those guys out there when Trey's not in there, right? So you can start Kevin Huerter, you can get him going in rhythm, you can play him 35 minutes tonight while still having a lineup that starts the second quarter with Bogey, Huerter, Gallinari, Capella, and like Lou Will, right? And like that is a very formidable offensive lineup that can keep you afloat while Trey's out. So, like, I would agree with you if starting Huerter meant that the bench lineup, you know, is like piecemeal, like Lou Will, Okongwu, Tony Snell, and then, you know, throw in, you know, one of the other guys. But it doesn't have to be like that. And especially in this game, which is the most important game the Hawks have played, I don't even know how long. Like maybe our lifetimes. Like,
no, since 2016.
I guess, but like it feels bigger than 2016. I think especially in that, you have to play your best players as many minutes as humanly possible. And like starting Solomon Hill again and just starting 4-on-5 offensively is just not how, like, I don't want to see that. Like, I want as many, especially if they're going to throw Simmons on Trey again, and Simmons and Thybulle and just
yeah,
hound
I think
Trey.
That's going to stay. I don't think that's going anywhere.
It's absolutely going to stay. And you need as many playmakers around Trey to create secondary offense as humanly possible. And Huerter is like our third best creator right now.
Yeah, I agree. But it seems like, well, there's some players that if they are able to watch the game and feel the flow and then get inserted into the lineup, sometimes that helps the rhythm just a little bit more. And that seems to be Kevin Huerter's thing, where he comes off the bench and he just is just that much more effective. Because, I mean, Lou Will, I mean, Jamal Crawford, guys like that, like these six men who come in and like they're good enough to start on most teams, but they still come off the bench because that's just the type of player that they are. And that's not to say that they're not starter quality, because Kevin Huerter's absolutely starter quality. He gives you way more quality minutes than anybody else in that role. But I don't know. It just seems to be working for him and just him as a player. And I don't think that putting him into the starting lineup is, look, there's a very good chance that he starts tonight. I just think he's more effective coming off the bench. And I think that it's just the type of rhythm that he has as a player. And it's worked. It's really, really worked so far at this point in the playoffs. And really, we just need to see Tony Snell and Solomon Hill just play better basketball, because he's not going to be playing endless minutes, and we need them to really step up. I mean, what is it? What 0 points for Solomon Hill in 8 minutes? That's just unacceptable. I mean, he's got to be better. He's just got to be better.
Solomon Hill is going to be who Solomon Hill is. Like, he's not going to, like.
Oh, he's a tough guy. He's the guy who's going to shoulder Nerlens Noel. After he shoulders Trey, like that's just who he is.
You know, he might make a couple more shots than he has been, but like he's not going to become a player that you can rely on to play 20 minutes or 20.
Oh no, 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 no! But that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. He's got to come in and it just hit some open shots. I mean, he was 0 of 2. Look, even if he just hits a shot or two and just comes in and plays tough defense and can do something while Kevin Herter's on the bench. Because look, I mean, it sucks that we're losing DeAndre Hunter. I know we're probably going to get to that in a second, but that hurts. That hurts a lot.
I feel like we already lost him. Like, he still wasn't the same DeAndre Hunter that we saw at the beginning of the season. Like, he was hitting the important shots in the corner, the top of the key. He was obviously very important during stretches in the Knicks series, but like, it would just be nice to have him in the for those 12 minutes. But I don't know. I think I'm leaning more with Max of just like, Game 3 is do or die, and you kind of have to go down with 40 minutes of Trey, Bogey, Herter, Collins, and Capella. I don't think there's any way around it.
Yeah, you got to play your best players. And look, I mean, the Atlanta Hawks are, what, 12 straight games they've won at home, mm-hmm. and 22 of their last 25 or something like that, something crazy. We're a very good home basketball team. And I fully expect State Farm Arena to be up and rowdy, very loud tonight, and I will definitely be contributing to that. if I show up next like on Saturday and I don't have my voice, or if I have my voice, then I think I failed the Atlanta Hawks.
I feel vindicated because I was listening to, I think it was Zach Lowe when he was talking to Arnovitz this week in the Low Post, where he didn't go to the extent that I did on this podcast on Wednesday talking about the Hawks Sixers with Kyle Newbeck at the Philly Voice. But I just think Trey with Thybul and Simmons, just they are going to be at his hip for the remainder of this postseason. Like, it's just going to be the situation for him. He is not getting Danny Green in him. He's not getting Shake Milton. Like, this is his new reality. So what he has to do, and he did not do this in game two at all, where he has to go back to the supervillain stuff. He has to flail in game three. He has to fall. He has to do everything he can. If he gets a little bit of daylight, do the Joel Embiid trip over yourself stuff. Like, that is something that they're going to have to do quickly, is get Simmons off the floor. The way that you attack if you're Trae Young is that defenders are so scared of drawing fouls from Trae. Like, that you have to use that space. You have to use that against the Sixers and their size, because they're just so much bigger than the Hawks, that you have to use that against them. And the way to use that against them is Trae has to flop. And he has to flop hard in game three to get them off him. And I'm curious to see if he uses that and goes back a little bit more to regular season Trey, because I think that is going to be important to get guys off him, to get him the kind of space that he had in game one.
Well, you got to give him a little bit more credit than that. I mean, the guy still played like an absolute supervillain.
Well, no, what I'm saying is like,
he just needs to hit shots. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, he was getting to his spots.
He needs to get to the line. He has to be the Embiid situation of how many times.
No,
Embiid
was still getting
to
his spots when he was playing. Ben Simmons was guarding him. It's not like he locked him up in a cell and he was, oh God, he only scored like 8 points. I mean, he just missed a couple shots. I mean, he'll be fine.
I think that narrative, while extremely predictable to come out of this game, was a little bit overblown. Certainly Simmons on Trey is the way to go for Philly. Like, I'm not arguing that, but anytime Trey wanted to get around Simmons into the lane, particularly if you didn't run a screen for him, because then you couldn't trap it. Anytime Trey wanted to get around Simmons and get in the lane, or Thybul really, he could. And so what I thought happened is Trey kind of panicked a little bit early and resorted to some old Trey stuff. Channeling Chase here with the complaints about the deep threes and stuff. But then he sort of realized, like, hey, I can still play my game. Like, I can still get in the lane. I can still throw alley-oops. I can still, you know, distribute that way. And, like, I'm not saying Simmons on Trey is a good thing for us, but I also think the impact of that was a little bit overblown, whereas it was sort of Trey creating issues himself. Like, in game two, he still had 21 and 11. He still shot 9 free throws. And he just missed 6 of his 7 threes, because a lot of them were really bad shots, let's be real. But I don't think, like, that's – I don't think it's that big of a problem for us. Like, offensively, I am not worried. Defensively, guarding Embiid, I have no idea what to do. I have zero idea.
Are we sure he actually has a torn meniscus?
Yeah, somebody talked about like the kind he has that, like, I think it was Tony Allen who talked about this on Verno's show, where he was like, I had the same thing and I was able to play through it normally. Like, it's one of those, it's a different kind of thing. Like, the kind of knee injury that Embiid has is not something that other NBA players have, it's harmed them.
Yeah, but I mean, one other narrative that really hasn't been discussed by anybody. Do we fully expect the Philadelphia 76ers to shoot 46% from three again?
If they because get, I kind of look, Seth don't. Curry was wide open on the majority of his looks. I think Tobias. I'm curious about Tobias.
Shake Milton killed us.
Yeah, that's not happening again.
These guys were, they had some other heroes. I mean, Joel Embiid obviously went for 45. Points, man.
Yeah, he's probably going for 40 again tonight. Like, you have to, it's like the Mitchell thing where it's like, oh, Mitchell won't do that again, this superstar won't do it, and it's like, all right,
so
here's
good.
38 again. Like, what are we talking
Embiid
about?
Is just so good,
he's
at basketball,
so darn good.
and look, I mean, the Atlanta Hawks just need to turn around and hit some shots, man, and I think that's going to change tonight. The Hawks are going to have a little bit more success. I mean, being with a home environment, they just all seem to play better when they're here.
Can we talk for 2 minutes about John Collins? Can we talk about this?
I was having a good morning, but I guess if you insist.
Are the ghost of John Collins?
Man.
35
man.
Minutes.
He's been brutal. I don't think he's played one good game all playoffs.
No, he's had a couple good games. He played a couple good games against the Knicks. And, well, game one, I thought he had a pretty decent game. Game one, didn't he?
No.
It was fine.
He was fine.
But he hit some shots.
I feel like even when he hits shots, he doesn't really imprint himself on the game, though. Like if imagine this team without Capella and like the main offense is running screen.
No, game one, he goes 3 or 4 from three, 21 points. It's a fine game.
It's fine.
Like, that's good. It's good.
Did it feel
that's
like that
expect.
At the time, though?
No, I mean, it obviously didn't feel like that. But 7 and 9 from the field, 3 or 4 from three. That's fine. That's what I'll take. Is it a max guy? No, he's not going to be a max guy. I think he's played himself out of that contract. Someone might pay him that, but I hope the Atlanta Hawks aren't that team.
I hope. Like, so.
I mean, I want him to be a Hawk. I want him to be a Hawk, but he's not going to get a max contract.
But you also just can't lose him for nothing, and he has to be a trade chip. So, like, I think he does re-sign, and it's just something where they flip him. But, yeah, I don't know. I've been very impressed by is Nkongwu. Like, he's been great in his minutes. I've enjoyed him being in the game. I think he is someone that has earned a spot. And as a rookie in this kind of situation, in both the Knicks series and the Sixers series, I think Nkongwu has been very good. I think Lou Williams should not be in the rotation tonight. I would throw Goodwin out tonight. I would give a couple minutes to Goodwin before I would throw out Lou.
I love that. I'm so with that. I hate Lou's minutes. Every time he comes in, I just...
That literally cost us at the end of game two. Like, that last minute he was in the third quarter and those first couple minutes in the fourth. Like, that's another thing that Nate has to get under control, is he has to be careful with how, like, just there's so many blowouts in the playoffs, and a lot of it's just like pressing the wrong button with rotations. It's like it gets out of hand really quickly, and it's like, oh, because of these guys being on the floor at the same time. And it goes back to your Solomon Hill point of, like, you just can't have 5 minutes of 4-on-5 basketball in a playoff game. You just can't. So I would throw out the Goodwin possibility. I think he's a much better shooter. I think I like the idea of throwing him out there and see what he got for a minute or two and see how that goes. But you can't, like, I think you have to stagger Bogey and Trey if you're going to pull Trey for a breather. You have to keep Bogey.
One of those guys has to be on the floor at all times.
Right. You can't do that anymore. You can't just pull both of them off the floor. You just can't. How do we, as we wrap up here today, guys, how do we see tonight going? How do we see game three and game four going? Because we'll be back by game five.
Hawks win tonight. I think they split this one. They're going to win tonight, or they're going to win on Sunday, or Monday, rather.
Okay.
Monday?
I think it's Sunday, isn't it? No, maybe it's Monday.
I think it's Monday.
It's Monday.
It is Monday.
Yeah, it's Monday.
It was last Sunday, this Monday. Okay.
Yeah, so I think we split. We're going to go back up to Philly 2-2.
Okay.
That's my expectation. Just because, I mean, look, the Atlanta Hawks play when you're that good, when you win 12 games, 13 games in a row at home, that's not a fluke. So I think they're going to win at least one.
Max, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Trey has one of those games tonight where he shuts everyone up about the Simmons-Thibel stuff. And I think, you know, he does his thing, 32-11 or whatever. Hawks win by about, you know, 5-10. And then, man, it really feels like they could win both these games. I'll call it a split, but I wouldn't at all be surprised to go back to Philly up 3-1.
Mm. How about that? Wouldn't that be something?
Win game 5 and then win game 6. I think Embiid's going to get in crazy. I still think Hawks in 6. That's what I was thinking before. I am still concerned about the Ben Simmons sitting at the dunker spot doing nothing. I'm still concerned about how much they rely on Seth Curry to hit his shots. I'm still concerned about Tobias Harris having to do 16 in the first quarter, nothing in the second. Just Joel Embiid's workload is insanity.
It's huge.
I think this is going to continue to wear on him. I think the 40 minutes are going to continue to wear on him. And I think Trey
and Simmons does nothing. Yeah. And Simmons adds nothing.
Well, no, he adds stuff. Like his
offensively,
defense is real.
Offensively.
Well, his
Ben
offense
Simmons
is transition. So like when they're forcing turnovers and the Hawks have what? Well, like how many turnovers did we have in game 2?
He took 17 shots.
17. It was bad.
Yeah, but that
17 was, to 7.
Yeah, and if you look at the transition stuff, Simmons is incredibly involved in all that. Like he's passing, he's finding lanes, moving it. He found Seth Curry.
That's his game.
Yeah. Like we can't do that. Like that is the turnovers have to go away. But yeah, no, I'm not nervous yet. I think Trey's going to have a big night tonight. And I think they split tonight, go into Philly, win that game, and then come back to Atlanta and smell blood and, win there.
Wouldn't that be something?
I'm so down.
I'm up for that.
All right. Well, Max has got to run, so we got to wrap up here, guys, for Max Markovich and Garrett Chapman. And for myself, thank you, as always, for tuning in to the Atlanta Sports Guys. We'll be back next Friday when the Hawks, hopefully, are in the driver's seat of moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals, where a bloodbath awaits them. Guys, thank you, as always.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.